This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I'm interviewing Douglas Gayton, who is the author of a new book from Welcome Books, an incredible, beautiful book called Slow, Life in a Tuscan Town. How are you, Douglas?
Hey, great, thanks.
Is it Douglas or Doug?
It's Douglas.
All right, good. I guessed well. You know, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, and you said something that I thought was really important about this book. Welcome is known as a publisher of art books and illustrated books on a great level. I mean, tremendous books with great graphical elements. And you said this is not a coffee table book.
It isn't.
And so maybe what you could do, I'll sort of describe it briefly, but I think I'd rather have you talk about it more. This is almost like a diary or a memoir about your time living in a small town in Tuscany in Italy. And it relates to the slow food movement and your interest in the connection between food and land and life. As you said, and now I am doing all the talking, but you're not a photographer. You started as a filmmaker and as an author. You went to Italy in order to film a documentary. And then what happened?
Well, actually, I found myself in Italy, living there. With an Italian woman in her hometown. We had gone back to live where she had been raised. And I decided that if I was going to live there, I should probably buy a place and maybe restore it. My story, instead of being under a Tuscan sun, became, as one friend aptly stated during that period, under a Tuscan rain cloud. Because in the process of buying part of this old convent and restoring it, my Italian wife left me, went back to America, and the builder took all my money and left as well. And so here I was in this town, not speaking the language, not really knowing anyone, and having no water and no electricity. And I thought, this is a test of sorts, something that I have to figure out. I'm not going to go back to America. And in a way, I decided at that moment that my American life was over, and that I had to embark upon a new journey, even if it was foisted upon me by outside forces.
Well, it was definitely foisted upon
you. Yeah. And so I actually, I ended up becoming part of the town. I ended up, finishing the restoration of this, really amazing place. And actually, through a series of events, actually working in one of the restaurants in the town and learning how to cook. And while I was there, Kara Mertes, who was at POV and PBS at the time, heard that I was there and asked if I would do a documentary about slow food. And for those of you who don't know what slow food is, it's a movement that actually began in Rome in the 1980s after McDonald's put the first McDonald's right near the Spanish Steps in the center, the heart of Rome. Italians were outraged because they recognized that their culture, their identity as a people, is intrinsically connected to food. And this intrusion, this invasion by the emblem of American fast food culture was suddenly in there, had landed at their doorstep. And so the Italians created the slow food movement, in a sense, to safeguard the cultural traditions that they had as a country that were clearly defined by food. And it's now a movement that's in 100 countries around the world.
Yeah, there's a big, big movement in the United States.
Yes, often. Absolutely. And it was actually introduced to America by Alice Waters, who I'll get to in a moment. And so what happened was, as a filmmaker, as a person who had been making films for 20 years, I certainly knew the process of filmmaking, but I had become increasingly enchanted with photography. I'd never been a photographer in my life, but I just got a camera.
Well, and there is a relationship between film and photography.
There is.
Helps. I think
there absolutely is. The big difference being, which actually is what led to the book, is that when you're a filmmaker, you tell a story which has a beginning and a middle and an end. You work with time, much the same way that a book works with time. A photograph is a moment. Photographs don't really have time in them. So I wondered how I could make a photograph that actually had the idea of time in a photograph, in a single photograph. And one day at a typical Sunday lunch in this town, which could sometimes take 2 to 3 hours, I began taking photographs while I sat at the table. I never moved. And over the course of the day, I took 1,000 photographs.
I assume digital photographs.
Those were digital.
Yeah.
I then printed them all out, and I looked at them all. And I said, this particular photograph of the woman, of the matriarch of the family, I'll use this one because this really, I think, expresses her in her best, the energy and her expressiveness is best expressed with this one photograph. And I went around the table taking different images of each of these people, and I actually combined them together. The table is littered with plates from the first course, the second course, the dessert, all in one, all a mess of different plates all on top of each other. And the photograph made no attempt that I built to hide the fact that it was many photographs all put together.
Right.
So what I ended up with was a photograph that actually conveyed 3 hours in the lives of these people on a Sunday afternoon, all represented in a single photograph. I then began to write the things that people said while they were at the table. So much of pre-Renaissance art had a narrative quality that all Italians really know is just part of the way that stories were told in paintings before the Renaissance. So you would see a stigmata, and you would see blood flowing and a bloodline flowing from one person, a saint, to another person, or you would see the date of a saint's birth, which of course were very, very important during the Catholic period in Italy.
Painted into the painting.
And painted in the painting. And so I did that with the photograph. And
what did you use to write? I mean, because that's a key factor in the book is all of the, most of the photographs, not all of them, but most of the photographs.
Basically, the book consists of, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 images. And the actual size of these prints is maybe 3 feet by 4 feet. And when I first did them, I put layers of plexiglass in front of each photograph where I wrote onto the plexiglass so that when you actually looked at the images, the words would seem to float in space.
Right, and you have depth.
Yeah, and you would have the sense of depth. So what happened was I did the first few images, and PBS put them on a website that had some other things on it. And our website actually won the Webby that year for best website of the year. But instead of just finishing with those first photographs I did documenting the lives of the people of my town, I continued to photograph for the next 5 years with no intention or no grand scheme that I'm going to make a book or that I'm going to do an art show or nothing. I really felt it as almost my occupation in this town. Every photograph in the book has a Tuscan saying that's written in very large letters across it, because these Tuscan sayings actually explain the meaning of what's happening in the photograph. And in just about every single case, the subject of that photograph actually gave me the Tuscan saying that became the title of the photograph. And since each of these photographs really describe the lives or the knowledge that these people imparted to me, I really saw them as collaborations. So every photograph I actually worked on with the people that are in the photograph. We would compare the ideas or the words. They would make corrections. And of course, I always left the Italian words in these photographs as they were, even if they were filled with my mistakes, because it was much more honest. Because again, I was somebody who was really learning the language as I was making these photographs. I was in a town with almost no one who spoke English. And so my only real way was to actually just to absorb the language. And the amazing thing about this experience, which is expressed in the book, is how the photographs and the experience I had with these people gave me an intimate window into Italian life that I wouldn't have otherwise had. And so
here's, I know I'm interrupting you, but there's this interesting kind of concept then of you being an outsider, having this really special relationship with the people there. You know, it's almost the kind of tension that exists between an anthropologist who's really living with a community of people, and they know, and he knows or she knows, that they're documenting the experience even as they're experiencing it, which is a level of kind of awareness and consciousness that's kind of about, you know, French philosophy mm-hmm. here.
Sure.
You know, where it's the direct experience of the event as well as the intellectual experience of the event occurring at the same time.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, the reason why I think, you know, anthropologists, you know, you mentioned French anthropologists, you know, like Claude Lévi-Strauss, the reason why I think their work is so interesting is because they are actually part of the subject that they're writing about.
And admit it.
Yeah.
Don't try to pretend that there's an objective point of view. There is no such thing.
And I think that's why the book came together so easily, because my own personal experiences, the complete dissolution of my marriage, my being alone and forsaken in this new place, is a narrative that's actually expressed in the photographs themselves.
And she was from the town.
Absolutely.
So she had roots and family there.
Oh, they were, and absolutely.
Right, so she leaves. Now, kind of emotionally then, what yeah. happens between you and the rest of the...
Well, it's certainly expressed in the book. The book really expresses everything from the builder leaving with all my money and me being left there, left to my own devices.
I love the story about how you solved that problem, though.
Yeah.
How you, you know, kind of cut through the red tape. That was great.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that my grandmother came from Italy, and even when I talk about it now, it's a very emotional thing for me. My grandmother has, you know, sadly passed away, but there is a problem that we have in this country, which is my mother is from Spain, and then on my father's side, my grandparents are from Italy, and there is something that which happened in our culture with all immigrants that came from Europe, let's say, at the beginning of this last century, which is there was this tremendous need, this desire to assimilate, to become part of this new culture, and which is fantastic. You know, you have people that really embrace this new country that they've become a citizen of. But what happened was my family never talked about Italy, and there was a complete disconnection from the roots, the cultural traditions that were part of our family that really made us who we were. But my story is a story that many, many Americans have. And what we're witnessing, certainly with this book, and certainly as I meet people who read the book and as I get emails from people or people who come to my readings around the country, is that a writer who once wrote about the book said, it's a book about the lost arts. And I said, no, it's a book about the almost lost arts. Because what I find as I go around the country is people have this desire to reconnect with the cultural traditions that they lost.
Right, they were cut off.
They were cut off.
And
people now are getting closer to the land. They are reprioritizing how they spend their discretionary income, but also their time. And we're realizing that we have become so increasingly, you know, industrialized as a people that we're utterly divorced from where our food comes from and the lifestyles and traditions that are part of that culinary experience. And the book, in a way for me, was an attempt to recapture that. It led to me, actually, ultimately meeting an American woman who had come to Italy to make a film, and ultimately her joining me on my journeys to take these photographs, again, with no grand scheme in mind. She, when we first met, she saw all these images, and she said, you know, what are they for? And I said, for me. And I would take her. I had so many amazing experiences with her as well in the course of making these photographs. At one point, she said, you know, I'd like to do something artisanal. I'd like to do something that I could make. My wife's lactose intolerant. She can't have any, you know, cow products. But she had this French cookbook from the 20s that her grandmother in Virginia had given her, and had a recipe to make goat milk ice cream. Seems like an impossibility. But in Italy, we actually tried, and my wife actually perfected this recipe. She had no knowledge about the food business in any way. But she said, you know, we should try to do this as a business. We should actually take all of these principles that we've been talking about and actually apply them to our lives. And so we said, where are the goats in America? Well, they're in upstate New York, and they're in Sonoma, California. So we actually went to Sonoma, got a bunch of goats, and started making ice cream. And my wife has now been making it for 3 or 4 years. It's called Lelou's Goat Milk Ice Cream. And it's actually, our biggest store is actually the Whole Foods in Columbus Circle in New York. Oh, our second biggest store is the Whole Foods at Union Square in New York. And we're now available in all the Whole Foods across America. So in a way for us, and again, this is the how the book closes, is it was really, how could I take these life lessons that these people had so generously offered me, and had offered to a person who was really lost? I really had reached a point in my life where I didn't know really what I wanted to do next. I knew I didn't want to continue with the life that I'd had. And as I explain in the book, these people, through their life experiences, through the knowledge that they imparted, really gave me a different window through which to look at the world, and really changed my life.
Well, and actually, that is a purpose for the book.
Yes.
Because in fact, what you've described, it's not just, you're not documenting something as a lost culture. You're documenting a culture as it lives and breathes today, which is important. I mean, Americans, for the most part, we do live a very industrialized and life that is separated from land. Even people who live in suburbia don't really experience landscape. They experience a uniformity of concrete or tarmac. You know, I think the goal is not to create a physical object that people admire, obviously. I think your goal is to create an experience that transmits, communicates ideas that will other people then could pick up.
I'm trying to, this is a book that, at the same time, I have to say that I never set out to make a book. I never set out to, everything that happened to in the past 12 months has been fairly amazing. When we moved to Sonoma, these photographs were basically in a storage room on the farm. And slowly people came and started buying the prints. And then gallery owners came and asked to put together shows of the photographs. And then the first big event that Slow Food did in America was actually last year, organized by Alice Waters. It was called Slow Food Nation. And Alice and the people at Slow Food Nation became aware of the work, and they actually organized really the first big show, 60, 70 images of these images, which became the book. And it was only after that happened that very quickly afterwards this book came together with Welcome, with Alice Waters writing the introduction, and with Carlo Petrini, the founder of the Slow Food Movement, writing the preface. And so it was a book that actually, for people in the publishing industry, we actually began the book in February of 2009, and it went to the printer in May and came out in October.
That's an for people who don't know, anybody who's in the publishing business knows that's a ridiculous schedule. You know, it's almost, people would say impossible, especially a book that is complex, has art elements in it, it requires design. I mean, it actually is an incredibly beautiful book. It does have those values.
It's very beautiful. And I also hadn't written a word of text. So we also, we worked 7 days a week around the clock, literally.
Well, it's a good thing you're a fast writer, too.
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time. But I probably, hopefully, we'll never have to go through that again.
Well, that's a good lead-in, so I could ask you about that. What's your next project? Are you going to do another?
Well, the
book?
Next, yes. This was a great experience for me, mainly because, as a filmmaker, I always want to tell stories, which is why I was never attracted to photography. The idea of a single moment just felt so incomplete, so wanting. So I would be left wanting so much more. But also another problem with photographs is, sometimes I look at a photograph and I'm just filled with questions like, who is that person? What are they doing? What is that thing in the back right there? How does that work? And I often feel that, there's a photo caption. I'll read the photo caption. Oh, no, it's not explained there. And I always feel that photographs leave me asking more questions than satisfying the questions that I might have. And I think the idea of introducing narratives actually onto the plane of a photograph, introducing time onto the plane of a photograph, allows me to really explain what would otherwise be very, very complex ideas in a very simple way. And as I was trying to figure out what a follow-up to this book would be, I initially began to shoot photographs in America of American farmers and put sayings in English. And I thought to myself, ooh, this is very trite. I think I just did this for the past 5 years. So I stopped. And I said, well, maybe I can't do this process. Maybe this is a process that existed within the context of my life in Italy. And maybe I'm going to have to do something else. But then one night I was at a dinner party, and I heard somebody use the term food miles. And they used it incorrectly.
Yeah.
And then I heard somebody else at the table say food miles about an hour later. And they used it incorrectly. And I started thinking about the term food miles and these other terms that people use in this new age of sustainability. And the thing is interesting. we are the first generation that's gone from thinking about a world of infinite resources to very finite resources. And we are struggling in real time to create a new language to express our ideas, our possible solutions for the predicament that we've now found ourselves in.
Right. Well, in fact, as you describe it, maybe these are the first human beings who have ever experienced true finiteness in the planet. Because when there were smaller groups of people on the planet, if they burned down the resources where they lived, they moved on to someplace else.
Right.
It's the story of human life.
Right. And this big blue marble is all we have.
Right. No place else to go.
There's no place else to go. So what I realized was that, you know, perhaps somebody needed to do a book called The Lexicon of Sustainability. And maybe with these photographs, I could actually have a photograph that shows a hothouse where tomatoes are grown in the Netherlands. So that when you buy your tomatoes in February, you realize how many food miles that tomato had to travel to reach your dinner table. And I could actually show a photograph of that hothouse and the tomatoes in that hothouse. And in my writing, tell you of that journey that tomato is going to travel to reach you. So that with an image, you can have a narrative experience that really expresses what that term is. And then maybe I write on that photograph, food miles, in big letters. And so the entire book is now unfolded in that way. And that's what I'm photographing now. I'm photographing everything from what free range means to grass-fed, to the difference between an heirloom and a hybrid seed, and really trying to demystify what these new terms are and the philosophies that surround them.
I think that sounds really good. Well, I really appreciate your taking some time to talk to me. This has been great. I love this book. I recommend it to anybody. It's called Slow, Life in a Tuscan Town. The author is Douglas Gayton. Is there a website for the book?
The website is just welcomebooks.com.
Okay.
And I would suggest that people go to welcomebooks.com because we've also made a short film that actually shows how the photographs are actually made.
Oh, that's
And we
terrific.
Actually take the first photograph in the book and we actually animate it and actually show you how the process works.
Oh, this is terrific. Well, I recommend it to everyone who's listening. Thank you so much, Doug. Douglas.
Thank you.
All right, take care. This has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host.